on the issue of marijuana use and changing marijuana policy. Earlier this week, a couple of things happened. One of them was that Attorney General Eric Holder was questioned by members of the press about the DEA raids in California that basically were aimed at and attacked medical cannabis distribution outlets. So here's what Attorney General Holder said and the question that he got from the member of the press about it.
And then a second thing on drugs policy. As you, right after the inauguration, there were some raids on California medical marijuana dispensaries. Was that a deliberate decision by you, by the Justice Department? Is that a prediction of policy going forward? Do you expect those sorts of raids to continue?
No.
Said during the campaign.
Also, well, what the president said during the campaign, you'll be surprised to know, will be consistent with what we'll be doing here in law enforcement. He was my boss during the campaign. He is formally and technically and by law my boss now. And so what he said during the campaign is now American policy.
So what Eric Holder there was referring to was that during the campaign, candidate Obama was saying that he planned to end raids on medical marijuana dispensaries, and then Eric Holder this week saying that that plan is now American policy. So that was received with a lot of happiness by folks working in the marijuana policy area, and some of us are joining, some of them are joining us today. But I also earlier this week was part of a teleconference that was put on by the folks at Americans for Safe Access, which works for medical marijuana patients. And the founder of that group, Steph Scheer, here's what she had to say about the medical statements by Eric Holder. And this is the first of these three clips that we have from that conference.
Today is a victory and a huge step forward in ending what has been a tragic, painful, ridiculous, and at times heartbreaking 7 years. Now that we've moved away from what could only be categorized as cruel and insane federal policies, the real work can begin. We are truly looking forward to working with the Obama administration to harmonize the conflict with state laws once and for all. As we're moving forward in this excitement, I think it's important to note that there are still a lot of people, a lot of individuals who are caught in the crossfire of what the Obama administration calls holdover Bush policies.
And that again, Steph Scheer, who's a medical cannabis patient herself and also the founder of Americans for Safe Access. And one more clip, and we'll have one for a little later, but one of the people who got caught up in that, the wake of the Bush policies, was Larry Epstein, who also participated in this press conference, and he operates a legal medical cannabis dispensary collective in Marina Del Rey. And here's his tale about what happened when the Drug Enforcement Administration raided his establishment on February 3rd.
To have everything systematically with no trial or accusations stated, just emphatically stolen from us is heartbreaking. You know, we work a lot with a lot of people and we assist a lot of people, and we've done everything per California law, and yet they came in there as if we were, you know, operating an illegal drug cartel. They stole all of our property. They stole all of our product. They froze and have subsequently seized all of the assets of our bank account. We can no longer pay our taxes because these accounts are no longer active.
So someone who, in spite of what President Obama or then candidate Obama had said on the campaign trail, the DEA still went in and just about a month ago and raided this dispensary operating legally within the state of California. And as you heard the owner, Larry Epstein, describing it, not a pleasant situation at all. So joining us to talk about this and some of the other issues related to marijuana policy and use are first Laura Thomas, who's director of the San Francisco Office of Drug Policy Alliance. Thanks for coming in this morning, Laura.
Thank you for having me.
Also with us on the phone line is Alan St. Pierre, who's the executive director of NORML, which is the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Good morning to you, Alan.
Good morning.
And last but certainly not least, Ed Rosenthal, known to many KPFA listeners as the host of the 420 Report. Also, he's an author, publisher, horticulturalist, and I just like to call him the guru of ganja. Ed, thanks for coming in.
My pleasure.
Well, let's start with you, Laura. Maybe we'll just go down the order of introductions here. What did you think about the comments from Attorney General Holder? Is this a sea change? Is this a really an important statement in your mind?
Absolutely. I think the Obama administration is moving in the right direction. I think they understand that this is where popular opinion has been for a long time. They understand that medical cannabis is legal in the state of California and that they need to stay out of the way and let us do here in California and in many other states across the country what it is that people have voted for.
And there are quite a few people, I gather. There are 72 million Americans who live in states where medical cannabis is legal, but federal law currently at least prohibits its use under any circumstances. So, Alan St. Pierre, how much is this important in your mind?
Well, two quick points. I would say that in the last 20 years or so, the marijuana culture has vetted this 420, you know, this sort of almost unofficial national holiday of marijuana smokers in the United States. I think 225 might want to replace that in time. I mean, if you want to talk about a substantive day for people to celebrate reform, 225 might replace that. And I say that because I've been here 18 years, and if I'm not incorrect, this would be the first time since August 3rd, 1977, which is when Jimmy Carter sent a message to Congress saying that he supported the decriminalization of 1 ounce or below of marijuana. I am not aware of a single executive branch proclamation, pretty words, no matter how you want to describe it, that set into motion something positive and affirmative about cannabis and not something negative, hostile, or damning. So it truly is a remarkable statement, and we just have to make sure they follow through with it.
Ed Rosenthal, your reaction?
Well, I think this shows the power of marijuana users to influence the government. I don't think that Obama really wanted to get into this. I don't think that he wanted to do that. But after the raid, there were so many calls, emails, and communications with the White House. It was like an eruption that went throughout the country. And notice that they didn't hold the press conference to say this. What happened was this was in response to a question. Mm-hmm. They did not. If this question hadn't come up, they would never have said it. This was totally the pressure of marijuana users throughout the country.
And it is interesting. One of the things why I thought this was an interesting topic to discuss is, you know, the other recent headline, and it was a bit ago now, but when the Olympic swimmer Michael Phelps was caught at a party smoking a, quote, marijuana pipe. I kept hearing that marijuana pipe, and I was imagining this tiny little pipe, and then I actually saw the picture, and it's like a 2-foot bong, which is, you know, a pretty big smoking device. And no one knows whether he was really smoking marijuana, but he has since apologized. Some of his corporate sponsors have dropped them. And it created a whole debate. I mean, I saw people saying, you know, he's a role model and, he, you know, kids look up to him and he's using this illegal substance. It's just so interesting to me the attitude about marijuana after all these years when everything we see is like advertising drugs in our culture and certainly alcohol as well. So, I mean, this is more of a cultural question. And again, I'll start with you, Laura Thomas, but it just seems like there's still a big divide where marijuana is concerned with people who just think, well, it's illegal, it's bad for you, and younger folks, I guess, and some folks who are just like, you know, it's been around for so long, what's the big deal? What do you think about that?
Well, I think the response to Phelps from Kellogg sort of shows up the hypocrisy with how we deal with substances. The fact that Phelps had previously had a DUI which was, you know, driving under the influence, something where he could have actually harmed another person. And no one ever considered actually dropping his sponsorship for that. But he's shown in a picture, in a photo, doing something that millions of Americans do all the time, creating no harm to anyone. And yet that is what the corporate response is, to drop his sponsorship. But I think the fact that people responded so quickly, responded with a boycott, that public opinion of Kellogg's has dropped since then, has really shown that people aren't necessarily as willing to sit by and let this hypocrisy around our response to marijuana be the standard response to it anymore.
All right. Now, we've got three pretty pro-marijuana folks on our panel here, and so I just, for the sake of argument, let me ask you, maybe I'll ask Ed this, is it not harmful? I mean, young people do look up to somebody like Michael Phelps, and here he is in a picture at a party breaking the law. Is that harmful in some way, particularly to young people?
Well, it might be, the disregard of the law might be harmful, but that's because, but it's more harmful to the government in that people realize that these laws are ridiculous and they're wrong, and they penalize people who shouldn't be criminalized. And I think that what's happened is that there's been a sea change in public opinion. We don't have, most Americans think that medical marijuana should be legal. That's been proven over and over again. In fact, in Michigan, where there was a statewide initiative on that, medical marijuana won by 10% more votes than Obama did. It's more popular than any. It's popular, and also in Massachusetts, the DeGrim measure also won by a wider margin than Obama. It's more popular than any politician. You know, what? Realistically, would you rather spend an evening with most of the politicians around, or would you rather spend it with some marijuana?
Or some marijuana smokers, I guess. Well, Alan St. Pierre, another thing to think about, and I was watching again part of the film AKA Tommy Chong, which really addresses the issue of the criminalization of marijuana use, and how even selling glass pipes, which is what Tommy Chong of Cheech and Chong was put in jail for, it was a sting operation. It wasn't like basically they went after him trying to get him to ship these bongs across state lines, and ended up putting him in jail for that. So what about the criminal penalties for marijuana use? I mean, so we're sort of talking about two things, the medical marijuana side and the decriminalizing it on a larger scale. How damaging do you think that this criminalization of marijuana use has been to the culture?
Ooh. Well, the marijuana metrics are pretty painful here. 20 million arrests since 1965. 100 million Americans have acknowledged using marijuana. One out of three youth between the ages of 18 and 25 acknowledge using marijuana. One out of seven of us as a general population use marijuana. In the last statistical year of 2007, 872,000 people were arrested on marijuana charges, 90%, 9 out of 10, for possession-only charges. There are 2.3 million people, excuse me, in the United States for marijuana-related. I'm sorry, 2.3 million people are in the entire prison and jail population. The estimates for marijuana-only-related offenses are between 65 and 85,000 people are in jail. I say estimates because this is one area where the criminal justice system does a terrible job of reporting how many of our fellow brothers and sisters are in jail. We can do the arrest right down to the county level, but getting the data on, which NORML has been doing FOIAs, Freedom of Information Acts, for 30 years. So, 2.3 million person population, 85,000 people, high estimate. Okay, that's not a very high percentage, but to put this into some perspective, if I'm not incorrect, the entire prison population for all of the European Union, which is a larger population based in the United States, is 85,000. Mm. Our penchant for incarceration in this country is disgusting. So, yes, the costs are about $8 to $12 billion a year to arrest, incarcerate, eradicate, and interdict cannabis in the United States.
You know, Andrea, I just have to say that Alan's estimates are very, very low.
Yes.
There are probably about 200,000 people either in lockup, prison, or jail in the United States right now for marijuana. And that about 10% of the, about 5% of the arrests in the United States are for marijuana. But what happens is because there are, the sentences are longer than sometimes even for robbery, rape, and other felony crimes, there's a higher percentage of people in prison than the arrest rate. For instance, 20% of the people in federal prison are there for marijuana. And so my estimate, and based on holistic statistics and then breaking it down, is that there are about 200 to 225,000 people locked up this moment.
That's pretty stunning, and there's lots to, that we can discuss about this. One of the things I want to ask about before we begin to open our phones to listeners is about the, as I mentioned, the sort of parallel tracks. And I asked again Steph Shearer, who is the founder of Americans for Safe Access, and they're working on the medical marijuana issue, whether their group felt that they needed to either connect with folks who are working to decriminalize marijuana or distance themselves from it because they really saw medical marijuana as a separate issue. And here's what she said in answer to that question.
The Americans for Safe Access was created because there wasn't an organization out there that was just focusing on the medical cannabis issue. And so we actually, while we appreciate the efforts of people working on those issues, they're at the end of the day very different issues. And what is going to be good and appropriate for patients and our providers is really a totally separate conversation. And so while we know there's a lot of talk recently about decriminalization of marijuana for everyone else, that's a very different fight.
And one other point on that is that Assemblyman Tom Amiano also this week introduced legislation to legalize marijuana in California and to tax it at, what was it? I think it's a dollar an ounce or something like that, or $50
a pound.
$50 a pound.
$50
an ounce. Okay,
yeah.
Thank you, Laura. And, saying that that would raise, $1 billion or something a year for the state. And, Laura, can you comment about these separate tracks? Do they need to be separate? Is there, would the efforts to change marijuana policy be better if somehow these two medical and decriminalization issues were linked more closely?
I think we need all hands on deck with this. I think that people who need medical access to cannabis absolutely have to have that. Mm-hmm. And I think ASA does heroic work around medical cannabis. We certainly, at the Drug Policy Alliance, work on medical cannabis issues as well.
Mm-hmm.
The New Jersey Senate just this week, for example, voted for the first time ever for medical marijuana in the state of New Jersey, and we're my colleagues in New Jersey are working hard on that. So I think, we need to move forward on that. People who need medical access absolutely deserve that, and the fact that that they don't really is criminal. And we also need to be working to end prohibition on marijuana overall. Prohibition is a failed policy. It fails over and over again. We've already talked about the costs of it. And as Amiano's bill and the analysis that the California Board of Equalization did showed that we could be bringing in $1.3 billion a year in tax revenue for the state of California. I don't think the state of California can afford to be turning down any sources of new revenue at this point. And that is in addition to an estimated $1 billion in annual law enforcement costs that we would save if Amiano's bill were to pass. So I think we need both efforts moving forward, and I really appreciate all the work that ASA does on the issue.
Alan St. Pierre, your comment about the parallel tracks, and it sounds like Laura's basically saying all these fronts need to be attacked. It's like we need the Marines and the, I hate to use a military analogy, but, we need all of these folks attacking the issue. Do you agree?
Sure. Well, in 1972, Normal sort of launched this whole debate by suing the DEA, Normal versus DEA, which sets the seminal case in motion, which was a 24-year case. And Yes, there are today 35 groups that are involved in marijuana law reform in some capacity or another, whether it's for decriminalization, legalization, medicalization, as we're discussing here, and for that matter, the industrialization of hemp. So, as far as I'm concerned, the more the merrier, all the flowers bloom, all the better.
And Ed, your comments on this. You were saying to me when we spoke earlier this weekend that there do need to be separate strategies here.
Yes, I think that it's just like truth. Truth has, there are a lot of facets to it. It's like a diamond. There are a lot of facets to it and a lot of different perspectives. And whatever perspective it is, it's still pushing the ball forward. So I think that I'd like to see even more organizations springing up all over the country. And that is happening because there are a lot of local organizations. In fact, the fellow who the initiative that just took place in Michigan, one fellow did it. It was the work of one fellow. In fact, the Michigan Senate just gave him a commendation for doing it. So what they were saying is that the legislature and the executive parts of the government can't do it. It's up to the people to change these laws.
We're talking about changing marijuana policy and use with our guests in studio. We're joined by Laura Thomas, director of the San Francisco Office of the Drug Policy Alliance, or just Drug Policy Alliance. Also with us on the phone, Alan St. Pierre, the executive director of NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. And in studio also, Ed Rosenthal, the guru of ganja, the author, publisher, and horticulturist. His publishing house, Quick Trading, a company. So we're going to open our phones, and no doubt some listeners want to join our discussion. Our number is 510-848-4425, 510-848-4425, 800-958-9008, toll free again, 800-958-9008. I just want to ask you, Laura Thomas, about how this issue, it seems like marijuana is, again, a strange military analogy, is sort of the Marines of drug policy, that this is the out front issue in terms of drug policy in this country. Is that true, you think?
Well, there are a lot of aspects to drug policy. You know, drugs are present throughout society and culture in a lot of different ways. And in terms of what the Drug Policy Alliance works on, we're also working on sentencing reform, on harm reduction, on youth policy, promoting more effective youth drug education, for example, ending the disparities in sentencing between crack cocaine and powder cocaine, lifting the federal ban on syringe exchange, which is an HIV and hepatitis intervention that has been proven over and over and over again to save many lives, and yet we continue to have a ban on use of federal funds for it. So there are a lot of different issues that all come back and connect in terms of they're driven by the war on drugs and our misplaced faith in this war on drugs as a way to eliminate the harm of drugs from society. And it is not working, and we need to find alternatives to the war on drugs. And I think marijuana is one of the examples that people are most familiar with, given the prevalence of marijuana in society. So it's, I think, for many people, the way that the war on drugs touches them most directly.
You know, and it's so, every time I hear that war on drugs phrase, all I can think about is how, if you watch television for an hour, how many ads you're going to see pushing some sort of drug, legal pharmaceutical drug that is going to help your depression, it's going to help your erectile dysfunction. I mean, it's, you know, it's endless. So there's this war on some drugs, but then it's like, let's just all take a bunch of other stuff for everything that could possibly, like, ail us. I don't know, Alan, what about that strange, like, sort of disassociation there?
Well, I can appreciate it as you're a fellow of letters that, yeah, I mean, how absurd. I mean, drug-free America? Drug-hyphen-free? Come on. You know, we have twisted language so terribly in this. You know, I was debating somebody the other night, and they wanted to insist that alcohol isn't a drug. It isn't a drug. I mean, it's a potent drug, just a drug we accept. It's a drug that we put in many different forms and is at the moment more socially acceptable than cannabis in many respects. So it's just just ridiculous that we how we use language in this regard. And you've touched upon one of my favorites. I always refer to this as a war on some drugs. We clearly don't have a war on drugs.
What do you say about that, Ed?
Well, you know, there's a major difference between marijuana and many other drugs, and I'm not only talking about the cocaine and opiates, but also things like tobacco and alcohol. And that is, if you ask people who are using it or have used it, do you think that these drugs are good for you? When you get to the other drugs, people will say, no, this is a vice that has not been good for my life. I would not like to see my relatives or my children, my friends using it. But when you get to marijuana, most people who've used it, even if they don't, no longer use it, feel that it's enhanced their lives, and they don't feel that it's created dysfunction in their lives. So we should look at marijuana differently than other drugs, because other drugs may create or do create problems for society. And the only problem for society around marijuana is its legal situation. And the reason we have this is something that media usually doesn't like to talk about. It's a jobs issue for the criminal defense, for the criminal justice system. And most groups estimated at about $15 billion. But you know, if you look at the percentages of arrests for marijuana and look at the entire criminal justice budget and just base it on that simple statistic, it's about $35 billion a year. And that goes directly into the criminal justice budget. And that's what this whole thing is about. And that's why police systems and have these policies of arresting paraplegics who are using it for relief, or MS patients, MD patients. The only reason why they're doing that is that this is a jobs issue, and they don't want to lose this. And that, and as proof of that, you can look at NCO, Narcotics Officers Association, and it's right on Google, and you go to their homepage, and from their homepage they have something, what we believe. And the first thing that they say is medical marijuana is a myth. And so that's where they're at, and that's what this whole drug war is about. It's about job issue. And think of it this way, you know, most people think that or it depends on your perspective. And from most people's perspective, the war on drugs has been a failure. But as far as the DEA is concerned, it's been a great success. There were 55,000 marijuana users in 1937 when the first anti-marijuana laws were passed by the federal government. Now there are currently 55 million marijuana users. That's a 10,000% increase. And if you think of each marijuana user as a potential client, and each arrestee as a client, then their potential client base has gone up, and they're arresting something like 14 times more people now than there were originally marijuana users. And if this continues, sometime in 2030 something, there will actually be more marijuana users in the United States than there are people. And, you know, you...
Wait a minute. How is it possible?
Well, you know,
more marijuana users than people?
I've just been looking at these lines and, you know, the number of people of using it and how it's gone up. And I finally figured out what it is. It's the pets. And the canaries are already using it, and they're singing.
Okay. Let's go to our callers on that note. Our number again, 510-848-4425 or 800-958-9008. I'm still working on that math. Our first caller is Kim in Windsor. Thanks for calling.
Yes. Good morning. Am I on?
Yes, you are.
Be patient with me. I'm going to try real hard not to break down and cry. My daughter became addicted to marijuana in high school, and thank God she never got trapped into any of the harder drugs. She's now middle-aged, weighs over 300 pounds, is stuck in an absolutely nowhere, mindless, boring job, and as near as I can see, her friends are in the same, that are steady users of marijuana, seem to be in the same place. Now, we've been friends and stayed supportive. Her dad and I still love her dearly. And I just have two really quick questions. Do you really, really want to be on the highway that somebody that's high on pot, or do you want to be in the hospital having surgery or being cared for by somebody that's high on pot? And my second question is, if it's so innocent, why does the head of the drug dependency unit for Kaiser Hospital say that marijuana is the most insidious of all drugs? He said other drugs have conclusions. In other words, if you get stuck on heroin, you get so bad that you fall apart. If you get stuck on meth, your teeth fall out and your health soon declines. But you can go along in this la-di-da fuzzy world defending marijuana for a long, long time and just having this soft, fuzzy, la-la life. Thank you for your patience.
All right, thank you for that call, and good to hear some folks not feeling the same way as our panel members. So let me ask you, Laura, the caller, Kim, brought up quite a few things there, but basically the most seemingly strong one was this is not this is an insidious drug, pretty serious, and, you know, what about what she had to say?
I think for any drug, whether it's alcohol or tobacco or marijuana, different individuals have different reactions to it. And one of the costs of the war on drugs is the fact that we don't have treatment available for everybody who needs it when they are experiencing harm in their lives or in their family's lives because of an addiction or a substance abuse problem. I think that that is, for me, one of the hugest costs that I've seen in my friends and family members' lives is the lack of access to substance abuse treatment. So, it's an individual response. People respond in different ways, but it's one of the ways that we as a society should be able to respond is to make sure that there's treatment available for people who are experiencing some harm. And I also just wanted to address the issue about the drugged driving.
Yeah.
I'm not aware of anybody working on decrim or legalization who thinks that people should be driving under the influence. And, the same regulations that we have in place around alcohol would continue to be in place around that. That's certainly not in the legislation that Ammiano introduced, for example. So I think that's really not a problem that any of these legal efforts are going to create.
Or anybody wanting to, saying it's great to operate on someone in the operating room while you're high on marijuana. I certainly don't think any folks on our panel here are suggesting that that's a great idea or even okay. So, but I do appreciate that call from Kim and those points, and obviously very painful for her. So let's go to another caller.
Andrew,
mm-hmm.
I just wanted to ask her one question. I know she's off the phone, but do you think that it would be even better for her daughter if she gets arrested? So, I mean, she has a problem, and part of the reason why she can't deal with the problem is that when you in order to get marijuana treatment, you might face legal penalties just in seeking the treatment, or you might be fired from a job if you admit that you're using it or something like that.
Right.
So that it would be much better if it were legal, and then she could deal with it and not face the threat of arrest.
All right. Let's go to another caller. Next on the line is Lisa from Oakland. Lisa, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, I just want to preface by saying that I also think the war on drugs has been extremely detrimental to the entire society, including the people who have been forced into incarceration. And I think decriminalization is absolutely important. But I also think that the medical marijuana, as well as the decriminalization, people have really underplayed the effect of marijuana on people and making it sound like as if it's just a personal choice. Some people are affected, some people aren't. And I feel like it's a kind of a very white thing. It's like as if they don't recognize that marijuana has affected a lot of people who, for whom it's not just a, you know, something they take when they go see the Grateful Dead. And
can you be more specific about what you mean about, are you talking about the way it affects you physically and physiologically, or affects your life in terms,
Everything. I've had marijuana doctors tell me that, first of all, marijuana doesn't affect you when you inhale it. It's beneficial for you. There was a whole incident when there was in Oakland where there was a marijuana club located next to a gay youth organization for, you know, primarily African American gay youth, that they really felt was detrimental for them because the smoke was everywhere, and they were trying to help these kids actually get out of drugs. And so I think it's really, we really have to be more careful when we're talking about marijuana and not just presume, react against the draconian policies by simplifying the effects of marijuana as if there are none, as if it isn't a drug, and as if it isn't simple, and also realize that in order to get a marijuana script is totally easy. Anybody can get a script for anything.
Right.
It's just a means of getting marijuana. It's not really being used all the time for profound medical practice.
Okay. Gotcha, Lisa. Thank you so much for your call. So Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of Normal, a couple of points that Lisa raises. One is that definitely pot is not benign. I mean, that it has can have negative health effects and can have negative social effects. Can you comment on that?
Oh, indeed. I think that going back to the first caller, we have to recognize, and I think all of us who have grown up with alcohol realize there is a use versus abuse relationship. You can use alcohol, like marijuana, under a whole bunch of guarded circumstances. But there's a whole bunch of completely obvious ones where you can't. Driving and working with heavy equipment, children in one's guard, etc., etc. All this stuff is almost self-evident. And so the fulcrum, I believe, is use versus abuse. And there are 17,000 studies of cannabis. It has been studied more than the atom. So there's no difficulty in today's world of the internet of going to, say, PubMed.gov and pulling down tens of thousands of studies allowing individuals to make up their own minds.
And Laura Thomas, what about Lisa's point that, and now I'm forgetting it because I was writing down PubMed.gov, but that it's totally easy to get a prescription or a recommendation actually to get medical marijuana, and that a lot of people don't really need it for pain. They just want to be able to get cheap and easy and legal pot to get high.
Well, I think that it's a misperception to understand that access to medical cannabis is easy in California. It really varies wildly depending on where you live. Some counties have responded very well to Prop 215, a state law, and have put efforts into place. And in other parts of the state, there aren't any dispensaries. There aren't doctors who will prescribe. It's very uneven access. So I don't know that I agree with the statement that it's easy for people who need access to medical cannabis to get it in the state. It's better, and it hopefully, after Eric Holder's statement, will continue to get better. We'll have fewer raids, but as you started this show, you know, there's still dispensaries that are being closed down, and so access to medical cannabis is not at all, I don't think, a given here in California yet.
And I don't doubt Ed has something to say about this, but let's get another caller in, and then if you have a comment about that call, you can let us know, Ed. But our number again, 510-848-4425 or 800-958-9008. Next up is Teddy in Berkeley. Thanks for joining us.
Hi.
Yes, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Good morning, everybody. I have a few comments, and then all the other callers. The woman who's obese daughter, it struck me immediately that very likely that her daughter probably needs medical marijuana to help her with digestion. She probably has some kind of problem with food, obviously, and marijuana is definitely I indicated for digestive problems and that kind of thing.
Well, we can't really speculate about her health issues, or maybe shouldn't, but I appreciate that. But if you,
I've got a couple other comments,
okay.
If I may. I think it's ridiculous to compare pot to booze. Booze really gets people way, way so messed up and causes personality changes so much stronger. If people have, like, 5 shots of whiskey, that's not comparable to any amount of marijuana. It's more fair to compare that to, like, sniffing glue.
I just ask, I mean, you don't think that marijuana alters people at all, or does, I mean, if somebody smokes like a bunch of hits off a bong, they're going to be pretty altered.
For a few moments, but they're not going to become violent like people or dangerous like people who are drunk for hours.
Okay, I hear you. Okay, and
I have a couple more comments. I also see that this war on pot is, I see it as, a war on herbalism as well. Very frequently, the pharmaceutical companies who have no qualms about selling OxyContin, which is, you know what that is, vapor, or perhaps you don't. They hate herbs, and they're always, every few years, they go on a lobbying rampage trying to ban all herbs. And I think that it's actually a symptom of a Christian-dominated society that sees herbs as paganism.
Well, I don't disagree with that. Just one last comment, and then we got to move on.
My last comment is referring to this as a tax on vice is wrong. Much more of a vice would be automobiles that are destroying the environment and killing children on the streets of Berkeley. Let's tax driving and gas and not medicine. I don't think it's fair to tax medicine. Perhaps tax recreational sales, but not medicinal sales. $50 an ounce is outrageous.
All right. Well, thanks a lot for your comments, and appreciate that. Ed Rosenthal, what about this war on herbs in general, or anything else that you've heard in the last couple of callers?
I think those are really interesting comments. And, thinking about the callers before that, both of them seem to think that if you use something continually, that it's necessarily bad for you. And I breathe air and I use food continually, and I'm addicted to food. What can I say? I think that for some people, some people feel that marijuana actually enhances their life, makes their life a better life. And I'm not going to argue with that either.
But, Ed, you got to eat to live, and you got to breathe air to live. You don't have to have marijuana, or maybe you feel differently, but, people can survive on the planet without smoking pot. I think that's what the argument
but
is.
I think that medically, a lot of, we have an endocannabinoid. That is, the body produces its own cannabinoids, and this endogenous cannabinoid is ubiquitous throughout all backboned animals. Fish have it. Fish have a receptor site for it and create a THC-like substance, and it goes up through the animal kingdom. And many researchers think that many people have an imbalance of endocannabinoids, and that they use cannabis to regulate that imbalance. And that's what I was talking about.
Gotcha. Okay, let's go to another caller. Grace is calling in from Berkeley. Thanks for joining us.
Good morning. Thank you for the great show. I just want to add a positive note to medical marijuana. I was diagnosed with a very severe case of rheumatoid arthritis, and I was on all these weird drugs that were swelling me up, and I found, word of mouth, I found out about marijuana and the clubs. And I'm not in a wheelchair. I've been on medical marijuana for 5 years. I'm not in a wheelchair. I'm not a drug addict. And furthermore, I don't have to smoke it because tinctures are wonderful for me. They take away the ache of arthritis. They take away the the pain of my brain that is on constant sort of pain. And I just want to say that people that don't have the diseases that I have cannot say anything negative about it, because marijuana has saved my life, and I am grateful that I have a club to go to and I can socialize. Furthermore, in the clubs, I have met so many alcoholics whose lives have been saved by marijuana.
Mm.
I've met people in wheelchairs who don't have to use painkillers. And I just hate this assault on marijuana, because I tried pot in my teenage years, and it's not the same. This is genetically altered herb, which helps us to survive. I am an old person, and all these old ladies that I know have gotten off of horrible medicines to survive and be happy. My brain is happy, my body is happy, and I'm not in pain. And I wish these people would stop calling marijuana a drug. It is an herb.
Well,
drugs are made by men. Herb is grows. It's been used as a medicine for 5,000 years, and I really resent it being called a drug.
All right, Grace, thanks a lot for your call. Alan St. Pierre of Normal, she brought up a couple interesting points. One is that there continues, I think, to be a negative association with pot because a lot of people smoke it, and smoking is seen as being bad for your health, and it doesn't bring in some of the newer developments around vaporizers and other mm-hmm. forms that people can use. She mentioned tinctures for one, and people can get it in capsule form and also sorts of different ways that it's produced at the clubs, I think, which is another point, is that there are different strains and different, and maybe Ed can talk about this too as a horticulturalist, but that different strains, people just think, oh, pot, but cannabis sativa, for instance, reacts very differently in people, and cannabis indica is one that's particularly good at pain relief. So there's a lot more information than the days of reefer madness, and a lot more, I don't want to say technology, it seems, but a lot more sophistication, I guess, in terms of marijuana use than years ago. Would you agree?
Well, indeed. I mean, some could even argue it, as it moves towards the pharmaceuticalization, there are about five to six different companies that are trying to patent components of cannabis and then make lots of money off of it. So, yes, that is all moving in that direction. Tinctures, vaporization, lozenges, safer ways to use it. I do appreciate the woman's remarks regarding, and it's not semantical, regarding drug versus herb or marijuana versus cannabis. I mean, Lord knows my hair has gone prematurely gray debating these at Normal over all these years. Overall, doesn't really matter a whole bunch to me whether we use words like cannabis or marijuana or herb or drug. Ultimately, if it's in people's actions that they're moving towards reforming the laws, it really doesn't matter what words we're employing.
All right. Let's go to another caller, Lance, on the line from Concord. Thanks for joining us, Lance.
Hi, how you doing today?
Doing good.
All righty. Wow, I've been listening to this. Oh, man, I tell you, I'm an avid cannabis user since I was 9 years old.
Wow.
44 years old. I have a family, 21 years married. Two wonderful children that are teenagers, and we're all into music and art. We're productive members of society, and met Ed Rosenthal personally. And cannabis is like tea. And one of my main points I was listening is that the wine industry in California has taken off, and alcohol is so socially acceptable. And all these people go to restaurants and drink in the wine country, this and that. Bottom line, it's booze. My dad, Paul Peterson, has been clean off of alcohol for 25 years. Alcohol is a very dangerous poison. I wouldn't want to call it a drug, but it is nasty. It is. Everyone we know knows someone that has their life messed up by alcohol. And the only problem we have with cannabis is the jobs issue. And that's right. It's like Ed Rosenthal says, the law enforcement want to hassle good people because we make money, and we're supporting the law enforcement on this and wasting energies that we could be fixing other problems, you know. And so, yes,
Lance, we're running out of time, so I just want to ask you a quick question and then get a response from our panel. But and you don't have to answer this, but you sort of brought up your whole family, and I'm wondering if you guys all get high together.
Absolutely.
Okay.
You know, and the thing is getting high, we do it at different times. It isn't like we sit down and have a powwow, something like we bring up about, like, reefer madness and all this conjured images of just like mayhem and unresponsibility. And the lady that called before about her daughter that's overweight and she thinks she has a cannabis problem, she needs to come to terms with cannabis and smoke it herself and realize it's very benign and harmless.
Okay, well, thank you for your comments and your bringing up your family situation as well. We're going to squeeze in one more caller, Kathy in Oakland. Thanks for joining us, Kathy.
Doing your program, I think this is great that people can discuss this, and I agree with supporting medical marijuana and decriminalizing it. But I am concerned about certain issues that are related to it, and I think you did talk a bit about the smoking aspect, and I know that I work in downtown Oakland, and kids are smoking there with cigarettes and marijuana, and it bothers me because I'm allergic to smoke, and if smoke contributes, of course, to air pollution. The other thing about the other comments about the woman's daughter who takes cannabis and has a weight problem, doesn't cannabis increase your appetite?
I think certain strains do and others don't necessarily, but I do appreciate that comment. And as we are wrapping up here, let me get a final comment from each of our panel members. And I'll start with you, Laura Thomas of Drug Policy Alliance. I just also quickly want to say, I don't want us to get into drinking wine in moderation is not necessarily a horrible thing, right? I just feel like people are like, alcohol, bad, in any format. So, but Laura, any final comments from you about our discussion today?
Two final comments. One, encourage people to go to our website at drugpolicy.org.
Right.
You can sign up for our email alerts. And secondly, is Amiano's bill is AB 390. Call your state legislators and tell them that you support AB 390, and let's see if we can keep this legislative effort alive in California as long as possible.
Thanks so much for that. Ellen St. Pierre of Normal, what do you want to say to our listeners as a wrap-up?
This is the busiest year we're ever going to see in the 38 years of Normal's existence. There are 25 states with 38 separate bills. California has a legalization bill, and two other big states are going to have legalization bills before April of this year. And an announcement I can make here today is, because I just signed the contract on Thursday, Normal's 38th annual national conference will be September 23rd through the 26th in San Francisco.
All right, and you can check out Normal at normal.org, NORML.org. Ed Rosenthal, last comment from you.
First of all, I'd like to thank you for having all of us, and also please, for your listeners, join a marijuana organization or do something, contribute money, do it anonymously if you feel closeted, and also join me on my MySpace page, just Ed Rosenthal on MySpace. Thank you.
Thank you, Ed. Thank you, Alan St. Pierre. Thank you, Laura Thomas. Thanks to our callers. And I also want to mention we heard some comments from Steph Shearer and others associated with Americans for Safe Access. Their website is safeaccessnow.org. Thanks for a great discussion, everyone. You are listening to KPFA, KPFB Berkeley, KFCF in Fresno, Sunday's edition with your host, Andrea Lewis.